Welcome into another edition of the Future Sox Roundup. My name is Elijah Evans. Joined today, that's not Dylan Barnes. I just had to adjust the name tag there. It is Jeff Cohen, my co-host Jeff Cohen today at Triple A Jeff. We are back with another episode. This is a little bit of a weird timing episode here as we record on Tuesday the 26th because we've got some promotions coming up. We don't know all of them yet. We have 2 weeks left in the high A and single A seasons. We did hear about the big news that we'll talk about off the top, which is Caleb Bonimer heading to high A Winston-Salem. We're assuming there's a number of other moves. We haven't heard yet, though. I think we're going to hear later today, potentially into later this week, maybe if there's a couple that are delayed here. But there should be a good amount of moves, potentially some draft picks that are joining Kannapolis, likely a couple guys going from either Kannapolis to Winston, Winston to Birmingham, and so on from there. So we've got a variety of things to talk about. And we've also had Jeff on the ground in Winston last week, who got to talk to pretty much everybody that we're keeping eyes on in Winston-Salem and high A. So we've got a good amount of things to talk through today. But Jeff, it's been a little while since we recorded. What's going on?
Yeah, it's good to see you again, Elijah. And last week Winston-Salem was the only of the North Carolina affiliates to be playing home games, and I did something a little different. I camped out there for three nights and took in a ton of games and batting practice, and caught up with a lot of old friends that we know from Kannapolis.
Nice. I love to see it. That's nice 3 days of just baseball and a really good time to be doing it, because I think it's fair to say that you were in attendance for some of the best baseball Winston's played all season, right?
Yeah. They're definitely playing their best ball of the year. It's a shame there's only 2 weeks to go in the season because they're in the second half pennant race. I'm just not quite sure they have enough games left, but they won 5 out of 6 last week and just are firing on so many cylinders. They're hitting, they're getting excellent relief pitching, which we haven't seen this year. So yes, it was an exciting time to be there.
Yeah, you love to see it. Those are the things, especially late in the year. It just gives momentum, right? It's great to see some of those guys that are hopefully going to be guys reaching double A and beyond next season, right? Take those steps forwards at the end of the year, have this big time. We've got 2 weeks left for them, right? So it's a great time for them to be heating up and just get a chance to potentially make a run at the playoffs and in high A. And if not, do that at the very least, bring some good momentum into next season. But we'll start with the promotion news and the kind of what that means for the rest of the team. Then we'll get into some Winston guys you talk to, and then we'll talk about some top performers in Charlotte and Birmingham lately as well to wrap it up today. But we'll start on the Caleb Bonimer front. Caleb Bonimer, Jeff, I was very excited about the draft pick. We were all very excited about it. It was an overslot guy, $3 million signing for a slot value of around $2 million last year in the second round. The expectations were high, and he has shattered them this season. I don't think that's at all hyperbolic. For the 19-year-old prospect, shortstop, third baseman, playing a little bit of both, he has just done everything you want to see from him, and then some this season in his first professional year. 96 games in Kannapolis for Bonimer. He's got a 147 WRC+. He's got an 858 OPS. He's walking at over a 15% clip, striking out only about 20% of the time, which the swing and miss was kind of one of the concerns for him, and the ability to kind of what the hit tool looked like was part of the concern for him coming out of the draft, I think, and why his draft stock actually fell out of the first round. And it's been really good. It hasn't been a concerning hit tool whatsoever. 10 home runs, 27 stolen bases for Bonimer, 26 doubles. I believe that's tied or for first, or either tied for first or second in the Carolina League in doubles this season. Bonimer has done a little bit of everything this year. It's been great to see. And now we're going to get to see him at 19, have a little cup of coffee in Winston before the end of the year.
Yeah, we see this so many times. We see it every year where guys start to get a little worn out and the numbers start to suffer a little bit. And then they get the all-star break and they come back refreshed. And that's exactly what he did. And he's just been on a tear ever since the break. It just did him a world of good. He's just playing excellent ball. I will ask you, you're plugged into the prospect world pretty tightly. He's been a little controversial, and I guess some people are trying to decide just how high to rate him, and is he a top 100 prospect? And I'm assuming the reservation is because they're not sure he's going to stick at shortstop. Is that pretty much it?
Yeah, I think he's a top 100 for sure. I don't see why he wouldn't be top 100 at this point. I think with Just Baseball, we've got him in top 100. I know Pipeline has him in top 100. I can't remember if Baseball America does. I think he's in top 100 for Baseball America as well at this point. So it really comes down to a matter of where you rank him. And I do think the reason that he's probably back end of the top 100 versus that middle range of it is because of the positional value. And then I think it's just the secondary aspect is like, can he start tapping into more of that power? Because the power has been a calling card for him and something that I think was always the expectation was a guy that could be a 25 homer potential guy coming out of high school. I mean, when we met him in Arizona in the spring, we were like, this guy's a high schooler. This dude is huge. And just physically, right? He was just very physically ahead of his years coming out of high school, right? So the power for him, turning it into game power from the raw power was part of that. And I think you see 10 homers and you're like, okay, 10 homers. For me, it's the fact that you have 26 doubles and a lot of them are line drives in the gap that those are going to turn into homers. Like not all of them, of course, but like if he's got gap to gap power, which we've seen all year, yeah, they might be on a line right now. First of all, not a bad thing for them to be on a line. Second of all, you're going to start to see those tick up even more, I think, and turn into more home runs as he ages. So yeah, I think the power translating even more next season and beyond, and then the defensive question mark is probably what keeps him in that back of the top 100 versus the middle range. Honestly, though, the way he's hit the last couple of weeks, if he has a good 2 weeks here to finish out the year in at high A at the next level at 19 years old, I see no reason why he can't be a top 60 or so prospect going into next season. Because even if it's third base, right, you're looking at third baseman who's going to steal bags. He's got more power to tap into. He's going to take a lot of walks. Those are great attributes. And at third, I think his defensive ability would play up even more, even though I do think he's been perfectly solid at shortstop. At third, I think he would be a plus defender with the rest of those, you know, offensive profiles.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah.
So there's plenty to like there with Bonimer. I have a hard time, you know, picking holes in it, like especially in his first year. I think when you see a great first season, like it's not even worth being like, oh, he could be better a little bit here, a little bit here. Like, no, this has been great. Let's give him his props. Let's be excited. Him getting to high A was already beating expectations this season. And I'm excited to see him in Winston. The question then becomes, and until we hear, you know, later today, potentially tomorrow, what some of this is going to be like, the question then becomes, who else is moving around and what does his arrival in Winston do for that team? I kind of see it as it doesn't need to move anybody else. I've definitely heard people talking about the possibility and thinking the possibility of a meeting Haroldo Perez going to Birmingham, which it absolutely could because Perez has shown the clear ability in the past month or so to handle the high pitching. He's really been good the past couple weeks. Also, I think it could just mean Bonimer playing third the rest of the season to ease up his body a little bit. It's been a long year for him. He can play third, finish out the year there. Kyle Odis is playing short. Haroldo Perez is playing second. You've got a really good infield there with the three of those guys leading the charge.
And as you and I were talking about off air, that will push Ryan Burroughs into the outfield.
Or just, yeah, a utility role potentially, right? I think he could definitely get some outfield reps. I mean, me and Dylan talked about this a couple weeks ago. Like, some guys are going to have to play some outfield, and some infielders that are athletic and young are going to have to try and play some outfield because right now the depth is completely lopsided, honestly, in the system, aside from a Brayden Montgomery, who obviously you're hoping is going to be a starting outfielder in Chicago as soon as next year. The rest of the system is infield heavy for sure. And in terms of the prospects that you look at as legit big league upside players, it's very infield heavy. So you're going to have, there's going to have to be some give and take somewhere, right? I think that when you look at Lodis, who just got drafted as a shortstop, you look at Bonimer, you look at Haroldo Perez, all those guys are playing infield. So then it's like, okay, Ryan Burroughs, maybe then you go up to Birmingham, like William Bergoglio is kind of penciled as an infielder. You maybe consider Sam Antonacci getting some outfield reps. And then you go up to, you know, each level, you kind of just have to look at the status and say, hey, could this guy play some outfield? Like maybe, maybe not. Like we'll see. So I'm not sure exactly what it means. And if it means Haroldo Perez going up to Birmingham, then that's great too. Like that would be really fun to see Perez in Birmingham just because he's been really, really good at Winston.
Yeah, and all the guys you rattled off and didn't even include the 2025 draftees.
Yeah, Lodis and then the rest of those other guys too. You got Carlson. Yeah, exactly. So there's plenty of guys to keep an eye on there. And I do think that sooner than later, some guys are going to have to play some outfield. But for now, Caleb Bonimer and Winston is going to be really fun. That Winston team, like we said, is in a great spot right now. They're playing some of the best ball they've played all season. What is your kind of gauge on just where Winston's at? And then after being there for 3 days, who are some of the guys that you talked to and then just stood out to you?
Well, I want to start with one pitcher, and that's Christian Opper. And I had a conversation, two conversations with him this year of note. One was in Kannapolis after he faced the best hitting team in that league, the Carolina Mudcats. And he said to me that night, you know, I really had to pitch tonight. I couldn't just throw whatever I wanted. And I thought, well, yeah, that's minor league baseball. And so we picked up that topic when I asked him about how his adjustment has been to high A. And he said, yeah, I've really had to learn how to pitch here in Winston. I've had to, you know, pay attention to sequencing and tunneling and all those basic concepts of pitching that I think he was so good in Kannapolis, he didn't really have to worry about it that much, which I think kind of is interesting.
That's a good thing, right? Like that's a great thing for him to be in that spot. And for a guy who's what, I mean, I think he just turned 21 last month. So he's 21 years old. He had an entire year of developing, working through a little bit of an injury, changing his mechanics in Arizona last year. And now this season, you see him come out with this electric stuff. He blows through Kannapolis. He just completely lights Kannapolis on fire, honestly. And then he gets to Winston and it's like, okay, I got some things to learn. Great. Let's learn them. He's got all the talent in the world. The stuff is excellent. He's still, I mean, Hopper's running, even getting to Winston, Hopper's running a 30% strikeout rate since getting to Winston. I don't care if there's some bumps, Jeff. This is a guy with some electric stuff. We saw him hit over 100 last week as well. That's one thing with Hopper where I had a chart from a buddy of mine that you know, I got to see that was Hopper's progression of velo. Last season when he was starting in the complex, he was sitting 92, Jeff. Hopper is sitting 96 now and topping at over 100. That is a world of difference from the left side, especially. I mean, it's a really exciting just profile and progression that we've seen from Hopper here this season. Yeah, there's going to be some command bumps at this level. You've seen the walk rate tick up a little bit. You've seen some at basket away from him. But I think everything we've seen from him is also just very encouraging.
Yeah, and again, as a relates to the Winston team trying to make a playoff push. Unfortunately, you know, he's really, his innings are now down to about 3 innings a start. So they're not letting him go too deep into games anymore as they're trying to manage his workload.
Right, 100%.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, just looking at this now, like when Hopper debuted, so he was drafted in 2023, right? He made a couple appearances in Arizona to finish out the year. So his first, and this was very much like a project pick. The White Sox taking him in the fifth round was like, hey, like we really believe in this talent, but there's a lot of work to be done here still. That was kind of what we were told and what it seemed like when he was drafted. He topped at 94.7 in his first season in 2023. Wow. He topped at 94.7 and his average was 91. And now we're at August of 2025, exactly 2 years later from that point, and he is sitting at 96 and topping at 100.4. I mean, come on. Wow. Talk about pitching development. That is really encouraging. And it's not just that the velo's up. Like, the stuff is just better. The slider is just the sweeper slider, whatever you want to call it, is better. The changeup, actually, in my opinion, has continued to look a little bit better as he's gotten more comfortable with it. It has nice movement to it. It just still needs a little bit of fine-tuning there. If this is a three potentially plus pitch lefty who's topping at 100, you got to be excited about that being your, you know, 10th best prospect in the system or 9th best prospect in the system, right?
Right. And so it was fun catching up with him. He looks really good. Several relievers in Winston are also just hitting their stride as well. I talked to Phil Fox and I talked to Jack Young. I didn't talk to Carson Jacobs, but he's been chubbing as well.
Yeah, 100%. There's some really fun relievers at that level. I think Phil Fox is a guy who I think is just at a really good place. And, I he was one of our favorite, you know, relief pitcher draft picks last year. And this season, there were some ups and downs for him early on. But in the last handful of games, and he's become kind of the closer for Winston too, as they've started getting close and competing in these games, it's just been lights out. Fox has been really, really good. I'm looking at his last seven outings. So the last month of games, he has seven outings. He's 8 1/3 innings, 2 hits, no runs, 14 strikeouts, 5 for 5 in save attempts for Phil Fox in that span. That's nuts. I think that's a guy who I would love to see get a week or two in Birmingham here to finish out the year, especially when Winston's wrapping up their season. If they're not in the playoff race, I 100% would love to see Phil Fox be a part of the bullpen in Birmingham. And then you go down the line, and like you said, Jack Young in his last month of games, 12 innings of 2-run ball with 12 strikeouts, 1 walk in that span. And then Carson Jacobs had a one bad hiccup a couple weeks ago, but his past 4 outings, 5 innings of 1 hit, no run, 10 strikeout ball. Three guys that are just shoving.
If you look at Carson's stats going back to, I think it was July 10th.
Yeah.
Even with that one bad outing, it's like 17 innings, 30 strikeouts. They're all three really shoving. Some other guys doing well as well. But and it's interesting because Fox was a seventh-round draft pick. You know, you really don't see that often that you're going to draft a reliever that high. And then Jack was two picks later. But
a lot of those picks were kind of money savers, right? Because they spent big on Bonnemer. So a lot of the reason that they ended up going with four or five relievers there in that 7 to 10 range was because of the overspending. They needed that slot money to be able to spend on some of those high tier guys. So you get a bunch of kind of more older, experienced college relievers. Now you've got a couple guys in Young and Fox who look like they should be in Birmingham soon and could be potential big league relievers one day, even though they were, these underslot money-saving picks.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very exciting to see what those guys are doing. That bullpen in general has been a big part of that success. When you've got guys like that locking down the back of your bullpen, it definitely helps. Flipping to the hitter side, I think we got to start with Kyle Odese, right? Because after a week or two of shaking off the rust, I remember when I interviewed him about a month ago after the draft, he was like, man, I just can't wait to play. Like, I feel like it's been so long since I've played. College isn't ended. I've just been sitting around waiting to get drafted, all this stuff. And like, he was just ready to go. Took him a week or two to settle in. But man, did he heat up this past week.
Yeah, on the season, he's two doubles, a triple, three homers. Yeah, he's all of a sudden after, like you said, it took a little while to settle in, but then he's so locked in right now and just having a lot of fun, playing some smooth defense, showing the wheels, running the bases. There's a lot of talent there.
Awesome to see. What did you kind of take away just from, I know you checked in with him a little bit. What was kind of your takeaways from just seeing where he was at? Obviously, we had him on for an interview a month ago, but he definitely seems like someone who's motivated and also just a good guy to have in the clubhouse.
Yeah, you run into a range of players when you interview them. He is just really personable, really likable. You can tell he's having a lot of fun. He's doing exactly what he wants to do. He loves playing baseball. And right now he's really confident, and it's translating to his performance on the field.
Yeah, that's exactly what you want to see from these guys in the early parts of the draft, just getting settled in. I mean, he's walking a lot. He's not striking out. That's one thing with Odese. The hit tool is definitely as advertised. And one thing that stood out to me with him too this week is, so when I interviewed him, we talked about kind of this pull-side power and how he has always been a guy that's used the opposite field really well. But this past year of college, he got some pointers when he was playing D1 to kind of be like, hey, like, you have enough pop to really to take some balls out if you get into your pull-side a little bit more and kind of attack and jump on fastballs, get ahead of them a little bit. And now you're seeing some of these homers this past week where he 108 to pull side, 108 exit velo on one of those homers this week to his pull side that was long gone. You're seeing some sneaky pop from a guy who is touted for the hit tool more, but he talked about it with me and you're seeing it in actuality now that the power is there and there's more to be, tapped into as he kind of keeps growing here.
Yeah.
So very exciting. How did you think he looked at shortstop generally in the couple games where you were at? Because that's one thing where he seems very comfortable playing short, but it'll be interesting to see with the other guys in the system.
Yeah, it was just a 3-game sample. He looked pretty flawless in those 3 games.
It seems encouraging from what I've seen at short as well. Who else on the hitting side, aside from Odese, who obviously stole the show a little bit?
Well, you got to talk about Sammy Zavala. And I'm curious to get your take as to what you see his upside is. He hadn't really tapped into the power yet, but everything else is great. Even as he struggled at the plate, he's played excellent defense in center field. And I did see him throw out a runner at home plate, so continued with the strong defense. But he's up to .252 on the season, .348 on base percentage. You can see that he's confident. Yeah, and he's so locked in. He's really aggressive. He's just turning on the first pitch he sees in the zone and jacking it. I'm seeing more power, a lot of warning track power, and I'm wondering if the again, he's still young. If you think there's still power to be had, and if. Play a corner outfield going forward.
I think that impact is the interesting aspect because, the defense is plus in center, actually. It hasn't been as much, been mostly center for him in Winston, right? He's going to have good defense. He's got some speed in there for sure. I think where it comes down to is how much can he get on? How much can he hit? Because he's going to get on base via the walk, but how much is he going to really impact the ball? when you look at the numbers, right, it's basically the same power numbers across the board as last year, right? It's two more doubles, the exact same amount of triples, same amount of homers so far. But first of all, we got 2 weeks left. And you talk about the fact that he's just hitting the ball way more, right? Like, he's still walking at a similar clip. He's striking out at a similar clip, but he's just getting way more hits. And yeah, a lot of those hits are singles right now, but he's hitting the ball more often. I think that with Zavala, like, I have to remind myself that he's 21 and he just turned 21 this season, right? So he still is very young, and you know, it's easy to kind of look at a guy and say, oh, he's been in high A for two full years and then some. He got to high A at the end of 2023, and now he's had two full seasons in Winston, right? So it's a long time to be at a level, but he was also pushed to that level when he was 19 years old. So you've got some time to be patient here, and I do think that you're seeing some encouraging signs from Zavala. So I'm curious to see what it looks like next year. If it is like a, hey, like, you've been in high A for a long time, like, we need to see it in double A, or do they just keep kind of taking their time slow and steady with him heading into next year?
Do you think he could spend as much as a half season next year in high A again?
I think he could. I would hope not. I would love to see him get pushed a little. I think that, you knowing what the profile is, knowing he's going to be really patient, he's going to take his walks, he's going to play good defense, I feel like you kind of just say, hey, like, we want to see that impact. Let's see it, like, and push it a little. But I would think he maybe starts in Winston, and then the idea is that you get him up to Birmingham quickly if it goes well.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And then the other guy, of course, is Gerald Perez. You know, he's been impacting the ball all year with 20 home runs and, you know, tons of extra base hits. But now, you know, the average is up to 244. The on base is up to 318. I mean, he's continuing to improve. Another young guy. Do you see him starting at Birmingham next year?
Yeah, I don't see why not, honestly. I really don't. I think he's going to turn 21 here in a couple months. I think he's done just about what you need to see from him. You're seeing the impact at a really high level. You're seeing him kind of continue to just be the, you know, the better and better version of himself as he keeps going here. Especially when you look at, like, the last, you know, month. So if you're looking at just like August, for example, in 21 games in August, he's hitting 372, 9 extra base hits in that span. It's just, it's lights out across the board, honestly. It's you know, it's been really, really good for Perez. So what I'm curious about is, like, what is the, you know, what does it look like for him if he gets to the next level and he's facing a little bit more velo? This is all in a little bit more breaking stuff. I think Perez has always been a guy who's pounded fastballs, and he's been quick with that, and a very quick barrel control. He's able to get into his pull side well. I think where you see him get a little bit lost sometimes when he gets pummeled with breaking balls, and especially at the double A level, you're going to see better quality breaking balls that are going to be strikes more often, and they're going to be moving more. So I'm really curious to see how he handles the just breaking stuff in general at the next level. But I do think it's been a really encouraging year, and at his age, like, he's young still, but I think if it's not Birmingham this week, which it definitely could be, then I think it's Birmingham to start next season.
Yeah. I'd love to see it this week, just to break up the logjam a little bit in Winston and give him a promotion that he's earned and deserves.
Yeah, I think it'd be kind of cool to see him at Birmingham. And also, Birmingham's lineup is just really fun right now. There's just a lot. I mean, both these lineups are actually very fun right now. But Birmingham's been, you know, the best team in double A the second half of the season. So they're going to make the playoffs in the second half, and they've just been on a tear. So it'd be cool to kind of get him in that atmosphere. I think after last year, right, I think a lot of guys are just like wanting to be part of that Birmingham culture and energy there following last season, where they won the Southern League, and just kind of building off that. I think they're going to have a very good shot to win the Southern League again, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, it's interesting. I talked to a parent of one of the ball players about what it is about Birmingham that makes it so successful. You know, I mean, there's this winning team every year there, one of the best teams in double A every year. And
yeah,
part of it is just this parent said, you know, it's the camaraderie. You know, all the guys come up together, they know each other, they support each other. They're not playing for just one position, so they're competitive. They're playing for, you know, 26 roster spots, so they support each other. And they expect a win. They, you know, and it's just a really positive environment.
That's awesome. It's always good to hear that from the system, and just hear that things are in a good place for those guys. So the one more guy I want to mention, and I know we did pitching already. Were you there in person for Aldrin Batista's last start in Winston?
I did see him. He's not starting. He's
He's piggybacking. Yeah. Right? Yeah,
he's coming in for two inning stints twice a week. I did see it, you know, and I talked to him as well. You know, the velocity's not back. It's 94.
Is it sitting 94 or was it topping? Do you know? Do you remember?
He just said it was 94. So my guess is
topping. Probably.
And he said, you know, it's still, he admitted the control's not quite there and the velocity's not quite there. But having said that, I watched him. And the one thing that was still there was that just elite ball movement. I mean, his ball just moved so much. A lot of late action. I saw him pitch two innings. The second inning was vintage Batista. Looked really good. First inning, a little rusty. But still a lot of ball movement. And so I'm really not that worried. I think
It's just about getting him back on the mound, on the mound, getting him some innings, getting his, you know, feel for the ball. I think for him, if he's making, what is that? That'll be about, he's made two appearances so far. So that's about, you know, six appearances here to finish out the season. Great. If he can make those six appearances, he can get through it and be healthy. He goes into next season in just a great situation and just in a spot where, you know, it's like, oh, we've got Aldrin Batista ready to go next year. And he's 22. He's still going to be 22 at the beginning of next season. So I think Batista, like, he'll probably start in Winston just because of the injury. Like, he would have definitely been in Birmingham by next year if without the injury. Because of the injury, he probably opens the year in Winston. But I would guess it's similar to some other guys we've seen where it's like, hey, if you're healthy and you go out and you have a couple good starts in Winston, you're heading to Birmingham where you'll spend most of the year, because talent wise, even at the end of last year, we would have been able to say, hey, he could compete in Winston or in Birmingham at this point.
Do you see his future as a starter, Elijah?
It's interesting. I want to see the potential as a starter. And part of me thinks he could be nasty as a reliever because it's everything moves and he is best when he's just kind of junking the ball and just sinker, slider, changeup, and just letting all three of them just it's straight horizontal, right? It's minimal vertical, right? It's very east to west for Batista. And sometimes those guys as kind of your fun, funky relievers where they can be sort of a Swiss Army knife, it is sort of an archetype of a guy who could be a very good Swiss Army reliever who can just get in there and just move everything around and just keep guys off their feet for two innings and then call it a day. They're going to let him have a season as a starter for sure. They're going to give him next season to see if he can start. But I could see a world where he's a 2027 big league reliever if they decide to go that direction and try to maximize his stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I've always envisioned him as a starter and thought, you know, this guy could be a really effective major league starter. But then when I was watching him and thinking about this two inning, the way that he's finishing out the season, I thought that would be really effective in the, you have him doing the, you know, the sixth and seventh or seventh and eighth, and then you come in with Grant Taylor. That's impressive.
It'd be interesting for sure. Like we said, there's a lot of relievers that are competing for innings too. So it's either way, there's competition. It's just as a matter of how much can he separate himself from there. Right. Anybody else in Winston? I think we've mostly covered the guys that have been going off in Winston lately.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. There's some other guys. You know, Ryan Burrows hitting up to 276. That's nice. That's a nice turnaround for him. Drake Logan kind of been flying under the radar at 274. AMAC leads the team in RBIs. So, you know, like we said, a lot of guys have peaking right at the right time as they're trying to make a playoff push.
Yeah, worth noting for sure. That's a really good team there. Just a pretty well-rounded team, honestly. That's looking exciting there.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Two guys quickly in Charlotte, and then we'll do a couple guys in Birmingham, and then we'll wrap up on that. Noah Schultz returns to the mound. That was great to see. Noah's back on the mound. Good to just see him back in his, you know, in two innings. Obviously, it's not a huge spurt, but gets through two quality innings. The stuff to me looked really sharp, actually, especially coming off of a month off. I think he, in two innings, it was two hits. He gave up one run that was unearned. No walks, four strikeouts, which is very encouraging. I thought for him that the fastball velo was in a good spot. He was topping 96, which is great. He's actually top 97, I believe. He was sitting 90, 95, 96, and then topped with a 96.8. So good to see Schultz kind of get back up in that up mid to upper 90s. And also just, I think that the slider looked sharper than it did pre-injury. And beyond that, he got a nice strikeout on the changeup as well, which isn't good to see kind of mixed in for him. For Schultz, like I don't think he was at his best health point for much of the season. It seems to me like this leg injury that he kind of took a month off from was something that had been bothering him a bit prior to them putting him on the shelf for a little while. I'm really excited to see Noah in the Arizona Fall League, because Arizona Fall League is an opportunity where you know you're going to face some high-end hitting prospects. You're in that situation, and you have the chance for someone like him to say, hey, like, remember me, I'm still a top prospect in baseball. Like, I'm going to be on the White Sox roster in 2026. And I really do think there's a very good chance we could see that from Noah here in October.
And he's up to 70 innings. So he's got about another 4 weeks of the minor league season, four starts.
It's probably only three. From what we've heard, he's going to be max in about three innings for most of these starts. So,
okay. So he's at 12, 15. So about another. So he's going to be up over 90 innings, between 90 and 100 innings for the season, probably.
When you factor in the fall league, I think the goal would be to get him to about 100. I think, which you wanted to get him beyond that, obviously. Without the injury, I think he would have been on track for 115, 120, which would have been the ultimate goal, probably. But I do think if you're getting him to around 100, it's a pretty good spot, and then you can look at next year as like the only thing with that is even if it is 100, I still think that puts it in a position where he either. If he does break camp with the team, he will be very limited. And if he throughout the season, and if he doesn't break camp and he's in the minors for a couple months, even when he gets to the bigs, it will probably be with a piggyback behind him or as a piggyback, potentially either direction. Right. I think that he's probably a guy who will get a piggyback role, either piggybacked off him or behind someone, in that next year rotation. And then you can hope that by 27, he can be kind of a full starter workload potentially.
Yeah, the lack of innings is going to catch up with him next year a little bit. You're right.
Yeah, but still, nonetheless, very good to get him on the mound. Whatever he can get out of him these next couple weeks in Charlotte is great. And then beyond that, you see what you can do moving forward for a guy that, obviously we still have very high hopes about. And I still think has shown that he is one of the better pitching prospects in baseball. And like it's still very encouraging to just see him get back out there and have the stuff look good this week.
Right.
The next guy in Charlotte, quickly to mention before we go down to Birmingham for a handful of guys, I wanted to touch on Frazier Ellard real quick, because Frazier Ellard has had, in my opinion, a little bit of the raw end of the stick this year, just because he had a little bit of an injury. He'd been pitching decently well, had an injury, doesn't get to go to Chicago after a handful of games, goes back to Charlotte, and has been up and down in Charlotte, dealt with some injuries. He hasn't really been the best version of himself, but I also just don't think there's that many pitchers in Chicago that are like noticeably better than him in terms of just like talent and ability. I do think that Ellard could easily be, one of a solid middle relief guy for Chicago. And lately, at least, it's been very good. He had a really rough couple games, but his last five outings for Ellard, no runs allowed in that span his last five outings have been no runs in a little over six innings of work in his last five with no runs allowed. And in all of those outings, he's had at least two strikeouts. I think that Ellard is someone, just as a brief mention, who I do want to see in Chicago here in September.
So looking ahead to 2026.
It's tough.
Yeah. Who would you like to see opening day in that bullpen?
It's really tough, honestly. I've been thinking about this one a lot. It's really tricky to try and figure out who you're going to put in this bullpen, because the hope is that you're being somewhat competitive next season, right? I think that you're not planning to make the playoffs, but like you're putting this roster together with a little bit less of a rebuild angle and a little bit more of a let's put it together a competitive roster, not a competing roster, but a 70-win roster. Like that should be the goal next season. I don't see why not. Yeah, they're probably going to win, 55 to 60 this year, which is great step up from 40 last year. But at the same time, I think next season's goal is to be, a pesky 70, 75 win team. And I do think that's reachable. The tricky thing with the bullpen is like, how much do you balance the giving a young guys a shot versus having some veterans that have experience and can lock down a bullpen spot? That's where it becomes really complicated. And that's where it's, if the White Sox spend, I think spending on I'm not a big spending on bullpen guy. I really don't like that. I think I've heard a lot of people. I put out a thing yesterday of like potential lineup, and then I had like 1,000 comments being like, spend on the bullpen, get a real bullpen. I'm like, meh. We saw what happened when they spent $70 million on Kendall Graveman and Joe Kelly and all those other guys, and it failed miserably. I'm not a big spend on the bullpen. what I would personally do is spend on a closer. There is 7 of the top 10 closers in baseball, Jeff. I don't know if you knew that, or free agents this season. So there is a gluttony of closers on the market this offseason. Spend on a closer, let Grant Taylor be your eighth inning guy, and then surround them with a bunch of young upside talent guys is where I would do it. Maybe one other veteran, potentially. You can keep a Stephen Wilson, I think. I think Stephen Wilson can be kind of one of the veteran guys. But I think there's a number of guys. Paulette's got to be in there. I think Jordan Leisure should still be in there. I think Wikelman Gonzalez should still be in there. So that's already 3 kind of in that younger tier. Prelander Baroa is going to be coming off of Tommy John next year, and he was nasty last season before going down with the injury in spring training this year. That's another guy you got to look at. I would like to say, I wish I could say Iriarte with confidence, but man, he's been rough. I don't think I can say that one with confidence. Yoenis Gomez, if he's not a rotation guy, if he gets squeezed out with other rotation guys, I think he deserves to at least be on the roster next year. I've been very encouraged by what we've seen from him in Charlotte and now in Chicago now. That's already a number of guys that we're kind of working through there. And that doesn't have Mike Vassell. That's another one that has to be in the bullpen, right? That's already 6-7 guys in the bullpen with a potential add of a closer. Then you go down to Charlotte and you look at an Ellard, you look at Addison Coffey, you look at a number of other guys who could make their way up. So it's going to be tricky. And I do think they're going to sign at least one guy in that bullpen, potentially even 2. So it's going to be a crowded bullpen. And I really do think you're going to have 12 to 15 guys in spring training legitimately competing.
Yeah. Zach Franklin. I mean, the list goes on and on.
Good. Thank you. That's another one who definitely should have a very real shot. His metrics are great. Where do you, is there anybody else you kind of are pinpointing, or anybody else that I mentioned that you think is yes or no in your eyes?
You know, not really, only because there are going to be 2 or 3 injuries.
Of course.
There's going to be some guy who's just, you know, not quite, you know, struggling a little bit. You know, in a way, baseball takes care of it itself a little bit.
Ben Peoples is another one. Ben Peoples, who was added in the Hauser trade, stuff is electric. He could easily be in the pen. So there's a lot of guys. But I do think I'd like to see Frazier Ellard at least get a shot this year, because after getting a shot last year and looking pretty good, this season has been rough for him. But he really seems to have found it in the last, you know, a couple weeks here. So it'd be good to see him get up there. Going down to Birmingham, a number of other pitchers. Speaking of pitchers, like, I think that there's this perspective that the way I look at the White Sox right now, and this is a little bit of a tangent here, but like, I think that lately the hitting has been great. The White Sox offense has been awesome. It's been super fun to watch. Teal is raking, Caro is raking, Monk Colson has been awesome. Like, you know, Lenin has been great, Brooks Baldwin, Vargas, like the young guys are hitting, which is awesome to see. And the pitching has been lackluster in comparison, and it's kind of reversed from the first 2 months of the season, right? It's this weird, like, now people are like, oh, the White Sox need pitching. They need to go sign pitchers. In my opinion, like, the angle this season with the pitching has been like, take care of guys and prepare them for next year. Whether it's Sean Burke going down to Charlotte now, whether it's, you know, Shane Smith having that little IL stint. I'm not sure he was really hurt, but just in general, like, the all of the care that has been put into this pitching staff has been accepting of the fact that in August and September, you might be throwing out a lot of guys that don't really matter. And that's fine. Who cares? And, you know, right now we're seeing a lot of pitchers get innings and get priority that aren't really part of the future. It's just because you are really just trying to protect your arms and make sure everybody's in the right place physically and pitch limit wise going into next season. So I don't think pitching is a problem now just because it's been rough the last month or two in comparison to the offense doing really well. I actually think the offense being really good is more encouraging when you know that the pitching should be better next year and that a lot of guys have built up their innings. They're going to be more prepared for next season. And you have this influx of talent coming from the minor leagues as well. I'm not opposed to adding a starting pitcher. I think adding a quality veteran starting pitcher to supplement all these young guys would be a good idea for sure. Same thing with a closer. But there's a lot of pitching that is still very good, and I don't think the pitching is some huge catastrophe like I've seen it made out to be by some.
That's interesting. Who do you not excluding Noah Schultz? Who do you think should be considered as a starter early in the season, if not opening day, early in the season, who hasn't debuted yet?
I mean, Mason Adams is still on the way. I think you've obviously got – he did debut, but you say you haven't debuted. But Drew Thorpe, I think, is coming back. Both those guys are coming back from TJ. They're going to be in the mix. When they get back and they're healthy, become, you know, a month or two of rehab starts, like, they're both going to be very much in the mix for major league innings. I still think Sean Burke. I still think, you know, obviously Shane Smith. I think Davis Martin, if he doesn't get traded, will still be in the mix. I think Yoenis Gomez might be in the mix, right? Then you go down and you look at some of the other guys who could potentially, you know, Martin Perez has an option next year. They might pick up Martin Perez's option and just say, hey, you're a veteran. We're going to keep you in the rotation. We'll see what happens. there's plenty of options here, Jeff. There really is. And I still think that doesn't mean you can't add a pitcher. It doesn't mean there's not a good logical reason to add a pitcher. I'm here for that. There's just still a lot of options, and you're going to have to think through who is worth prioritizing versus others and really just compete. I think there's going to be a competition. There's going to be legit competition for starting jobs in both the bullpen and the rotation next season.
Well, and I think next year we might see what we expected this year, which is we thought that the Charlotte rotation was going to be loaded with a lot of the young guys,
right,
you know, who were going to be eventually shuttling back and forth to Chicago.
Sure.
I think that may unfold next year with Mason Adams.
And then I didn't even mention Tanner McDougal. I mean, that's another total.
Right.
McDougal will 100% be in competition for a rotation spot. I think he's, my guess is he's getting called up here in the next week or two for a bullpen spot to finish out the year, but he's got to be on the 40-man, and he's going to very much be in competition for a rotation spot as well. So there's a lot of guys. I'm all for signing. If the White Sox want to pony up and they want to sign a starting pitcher, a closer, and a big-time bat, great. If it comes down to only picking one or two of those three because of the way the White Sox spend, I'm okay with not signing a starter personally.
Well, what's the option on Martin Perez?
It's a good question. I don't think
it's like $5 million.
Crazy. It's definitely nothing too crazy.
Yeah. I think they could do that. They like him.
It's a mutual option for 10. So that's a little steep for Perez. It's double the current salary. That's a little bit steep. I think that might be a little bit of a stretch. I wouldn't mind it though. If they want the veteran, I think that's a fine. Again, the money on the books, there's two contracts on the books that aren't arbitration, Jeff. It's It's Andrew Benintendi and Luis Robert. That's it. Those are the only non-arbitration contracts. Even Mike Tauchman is still in his last year of arbitration technically because he's been bounced around. You know, so there's two guys that have guaranteed money, and assuming the White Sox are accepting the Robert option, which they will, $20 million for Robert. And I believe either 17 or 15 for Benintendi. It's either 17 this year or it flips to 15 this year. It's no money. That's no money on the books. And then you've got arbitration guys and a ton of pre-arbitration guys, right? They haven't – all these guys, Caro, Teal, Colson, Brooks, they're all making $1 million, give or take. You got time and you got money to spend. Yeah, Benintendi's $17 million. So that's $37 million on the books next year. I would love to move that contract, by the way. That'd be great if they could find a way to move the Benintendi contract. And he's been decent. They could maybe move it. But two contracts. They have money to sign a starter, a closer, and a big-time bat. They definitely do. That's very reasonable. But if you have to pick two of those three, I don't mind the idea of not signing a real starter because I think there's just so many guys you can just give a chance and see what happens. And you're still not really competing next season like you're hoping to, you know, beyond next year.
Well, I love the veteran closer idea because worst case you flip him at the deadline. Best case, you know, he helps you get to 75 wins. That's exciting, and of course, I think everyone agrees that a power bat would be really nice to see in that lineup.
Yeah, in terms of the guys that have, including guys that have opt outs, so some of these guys might not actually be free agents. But just to give you a little sample, including guys with options. Edwin Diaz, Devin Williams, Ryan Helsley, Kirby Yates, Andres Munoz, Raisel Iglesias, Aroldis Chapman, Robert Suarez, Kenley Jansen, Luke Weaver. The list keeps going. It's ridiculous class for relievers in a free agency class where the starters behind Framber are pretty lackluster and the hitters behind Schwarber, Tucker, Bellinger are pretty lackluster. The reliever class is absolutely stacked. Even if big-time contenders sign the top four names I mentioned, you could still look at, you know, a Raisel Iglesias, who's having a huge second half, a Kirby Yates. You could buy low on a Ryan Helsley. There is Pete Fairbanks as an option. I think the team will probably pick that up. Luke Weaver has been very good for the Yankees for the last 2 years. Kyle Finnegan has been a quality closer. Taylor and Tyler Rogers both have been very good relievers. I just keep seeing names as I'm looking through this. Mm-hmm. You could get a very, very solid guy to put in the back of that bullpen with Grant Taylor and not break the bank completely, right?
How do you feel about a guy like Ryan O'Hearn?
I like the idea. We should do a free agent episode soon because that's one thing I've been thinking about. I don't mind it. I would rather spend a little more on like a Josh Naylor or a Gino Suarez. I think those are the two guys that I've kind of had penciled in my mind of like a corner bat, you guarantee power production. Yeah, you might overspend a little on a player like that. They're probably not the highest WAR players. They're not the most, you know, long-term productive players. But I think that if you just want just an influx of a veteran power bat who can just give you that type of stuff, I would trust and rather spend a little more on those two than on an O'Hearn personally.
Okay.
I also think the White Sox, weirdly enough, even though they didn't used to, have a lot of lefties now, which is funny because it was always like, oh, where are the lefties coming from other than Colson? But now you're in a situation where, you know, with Caro being a switch hitter, with Teal being a lefty, with Colson being a lefty, with all these other guys hitting from the left side, Benintendi, if he's still around, like I actually would rather almost add a righty.
You know, all season long, as we've, you know, every podcast, we always have at least a partial conversation about what does this mean for 2026? And my concern has always been, where's the power coming from? Well, now with Colson, that dynamic has changed in a big way because you got Colson and hopefully the good Luis Robert and then a free agent bat. And there's your 3-4-5 power bat.
If you can get a 20-plus homer guy in free agency, which I do believe they have the money to do, it's just a matter of getting to appeal to one of those tiers of free agents and say, hey, like, we're going to get good here in the next couple of years. Like, we're not going to be the worst team ever. And I think the negotiations from that angle will be a little bit tough this offseason because I still think they're 1 year away from that slightly more sellable team, right, to a free agent. But I think that there is money and logic and resources that could bring in, you know, one of those higher end power bats that you pair with Colson and Luis and whoever else in this lineup. And I also think both catchers are going to start hitting for more power. If you look at the production of both Caro and Teal and the way they hit the ball and the amount they're hitting the ball on a line right now, they're due for some gradual power increase. I don't think either of those guys are big time power guys, but I definitely can see both of them hitting, you know, 15 homers next season, which would be great supplemental power.
Yeah.
A couple guys in Birmingham.
It's amazing how Colson has just changed the dynamic completely.
It's unbelievable, honestly. He's leaning into the power bat, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I think the average for Colson, when you look at it, is going to be lower than we expected it to be a couple years ago, right? For the rest for his career at the big league level. I'm okay with that, Jeff. I really am. I'm happy to see him lean into that power because the White Sox need that power. Yeah. And I think Colson is becoming a better version of himself while tapping in and leaning into that powerful archetype more.
No, I couldn't agree more. That's always been the thing that's concerned me. Having enough power and having enough defense.
Yeah. The defense looked really good in my opinion. Yeah. A couple guys in Birmingham. I know we totally took a tangent there, but it was worth it because this is something to talk about. Couple arms, just more arms we're talking about. Riley Gowans and Tyler Schweitzer have both been very good of late. Schweitzer comes down from Charlotte, where he had struggled a little bit at that level, just getting settled in. His last five games at Birmingham now, 20 innings of no run ball, 4 walks in those 20 innings. He has been lights out. And then Riley Gowans, in his last couple starts especially, he's been really good in general the second half of the season, but his last two starts, back-to-back scoreless outings, 3 total hits across 10 innings with 12 strikeouts. Great to see just two guys that, you know, profile more as depth, you know, starters in the system, but nice to see them just shoving for a Birmingham team that keeps winning.
Yeah, it blows my mind to see what Tyler did in Birmingham, what he did in Charlotte, and now what he's doing again in Birmingham. It's just, you wonder, how can the results be so dramatically different? And we see it time and time again, right? This isn't an exception. We see guys just shoving Birmingham.
Yeah, unfortunately, guys that allow a little bit of elevation on the ball in Charlotte just tend to get hit a little bit. The ball flies there, and it's unfortunate because Schweitzer, I still think, is a very solid pitcher. I think he's got a good mix. He's got good command, right? The fastball's a good offering. But for him, you know, he generally gets a lot of ground balls, but he gets hit sometimes, and he gets hit in the air. And in Charlotte, the ball just freaking flies, man, and it's frustrating. You wish it wasn't that type of way, but it is sometimes. And you're seeing, you know, he's giving up a lot of homers, unfortunately, at that level. So that's been good. And then another guy to mention is Connor McCullough. Connor McCullough was a guy that we talked about. You know, he looked really solid his first full professional season in Kannapolis, especially. He got to Winston, had some ups and downs in 2023. Last year out of the gate, looked pretty good in Birmingham, goes down with an injury, spends the year out, he gets surgery. I believe it was TJ. I'm not 100% sure, but I believe it was either TJ or the alternative elbow brace, whatever. And then comes back this season and he rehabbed. He made 2 starts in Winston where he looked really good. And now 4 outings in Birmingham for McCullough, 16 innings of two earned runs, so 1.13 ERA across those 16 innings, 3 walks, 14 strikeouts. Really good to see coming off of surgery. This is a guy who's 25, obviously an older arm, undrafted free agent, not as much of a prospect pedigree guy. But McCullough is looked really good and at least is a depth piece who it's good to just see him back on the mound and then shoving in Birmingham.
You had another arm succeeding in Birmingham.
It's a pitcher friendly place, that we know that, but it doesn't mean we don't have to be excited about guys playing
Absolutely. More power to them. Let's get them to sell it.
Yeah, right. Last two guys to discuss, just rounding out in Birmingham here. The duo of Antonacci and Brandon Montgomery has been, they have been electric of late. The last 2 weeks for those guys, they've both played 11 games in the past 2 weeks. Brandon Montgomery, 410, 531, 641 slash. Sam Antonacci, 400, 569, 486 slash. Both those guys OPSing over 1,000 in the past 2 weeks. They've both been walking. I mean, it's just so fun. Brandon Montgomery with 9 doubles across those last 10 games or whatever it is. He had that one series last, not this week, but the last week in Pensacola where he had 8 doubles or 9 doubles in one series. Like, it has just been so fun to watch these two guys cook. I think them in the lineup together is great, and they're going to probably do the same thing where they hit right next to each other in the Arizona Fall League, which, you know, I don't think it's crazy to say both these guys can open the year in Charlotte and you see what happens. And then mid-season, they're the mid-season replacements for veterans getting moved off the roster next year.
Wow. Yeah. Just amazing. Amazing. And we have seen clearly this year that the new regime in Chicago is very aggressive with promotions. So,
That easily could
happen.
Yeah, I think there's a very good chance they both open in Charlotte. If they don't open in Charlotte, I think they're there quickly, especially after Arizona. If they go to the Arizona Fall League and they're facing off against top pitching prospects across baseball and they show out there, I see no reason why they can't be in Charlotte. And then next year, like the way I look at it and getting back to what we were just talking about a few minutes ago here, like I think they, you know, whether you move off of either Benintendi or Tauchman in the offseason doesn't really matter that much. Because sooner than later, one of them is going to have to go because Brandon Montgomery is going to be knocking on the door. And Sam Antonacci is either going to push someone out of time at second base, or he's going to start playing some third if Vargas is at first, or he's going to push, you know, start getting some outfield reps and then push one of them out in the corner outfield spots. So it's just these guys are coming. Like these two are both going to be in Chicago next year at some point. It's just a matter of when and what it looks like and how the roster gets manipulated to make it happen.
All right, you got me fired up. I'm ready to talk spring training dates and figure out when we're going to be there.
I will be there for sure. It's going to be cool. It's going to be fun. I'm trying to figure out with everything. We're going to be heading to the World Baseball Classic for Just Baseball as well in Miami in March, which will be very fun. That's going to be a whole other facet to all of this. It's interesting to see, like, is there a chance we get some White Sox guys in the World Baseball roster? Weirdly, I think it might be good that we probably won't. I think it'll be interesting to see if kind of what it looks like, because there's so many young guys in this team. I don't think anybody on the White Sox roster is quite Team USA standard. Maybe Colson Montgomery, you never know. But I don't think so. In which case, you're in a situation where maybe it's a couple of international guys playing, but that's a whole other wrinkle to spring training next year. It's going to be the fact that the World Baseball Classic goes up until 2 weeks before the Major League season starts. So that's a whole different thing to start thinking about as we look into spring training and beyond. But there's a lot of competition, a lot to be done this offseason. I think sometime in the next week or two before the minor league season fully ends, we should do a little free agency look into and just roster outlook. Because I think that there's some clear targets for the White Sox. What I'm really hoping for, Jeff, is quality over quantity. I don't think you need to add 7 free agents to this team like they've done in the past and just tried to like fill holes with a bunch of veterans here, a bunch of veterans there. Like that was fine this year. You've gotten some production out of some guys. You flipped Hauser for 3 prospects. Great. You Tauchman has been way better than even expected, right? Taylor's played his role. You've done that this year. I want to see like 2 impact guys, 2 impact players. You can add a couple other veterans, see 1-year deal flyer guys. Sure. I want to see 2 impact signings. That's where I'm at.
Yeah, it works for me. I love it.
We'll see what happens. Yeah. All right. Well, we'll talk to you next time on the roundup. This has been fun for sure. As always, Jeff is at AAA Jeff on Twitter. I am at Elijah EV8. Just a reminder, we are brought to you by the Just Baseball Media Network now, which has been super cool for us. We got some more fun stuff in the works here. And we'll talk to you next time on the roundup. Thanks, Jeff.
Cool. Have a good week. I'm off to Kannapolis.
Nice.